misses. 0 for 2 now. We'll get the single point. Good tackle here from the Cats. Ball's loose. John Chick has it. And Chick has his second fumble recovery of the game. And suddenly there's a spark here in Hamilton. The crowd back into it. Mazzoli now heaves it into the arms of the BC Lions. And that is definitely all she wrote for the Hamilton Tiger Cats tonight.
Welcome to Podski Weewee. I'm Josh Smith.
I'm Mike Graham.
All right, Mike, week two of the CFL Podcast Family Fantasy League is in the books, and our run of undefeatedness came crashing down. We lost our week two matchup to the 2-0 CFL Podcast, 181 to 143. We're very Tie Cats heavy, and as we'll get into later, they didn't do anything on offense, so that really hampered our ability to win this game. But it's one loss. We're still 1-1. We're just like the Tie Cats. We're still hanging in there. We were great in week one, not so great in week two. Hopefully week three, we can pull this out. And in week three, we will be taking on the Rouge, White, and Blue podcast. Now, that is a show that is hosted by one of the friends of our show, Joe Pritchard. Everyone knows him on Twitter as USFL Tecmo. Him and his friend, Os Davis, host this show. And it's basically a CFL podcast from an American perspective. It's a very interesting show. Both these gentlemen live in the United States. So to kind of get that U.S. perspective on the CFL, I think is kind of neat. And they've had me on the show twice, so they can't be all that bad. But we are going to crush them this week. That's just the way it's going to be. And it's kind of interesting. The Tie Cats are playing the Bombers, and Joe is a Bombers fan, so our show's playing one another. I think it's kind of serendipitous. So I look forward to kicking their ass this week and getting back on the winning ways, get to 2-1, and then we'll just have to finish the season like 17-1, I guess.
Yeah, that sounds like a pretty good record. I mean, where's my invite on the show, huh?
Oh, you're being called out, guys. Let's get Mike on the show. He's good. Come on.
Yeah, come on. Two times to nothing. I mean, where's not even a sniff, not even an invite. That's all right. We'll kick your guys' asses for
For the snub. We're doing it. You know, like win one for the Gipper. We're winning one for the Mikester.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, speaking of, I don't even know how to go from that to this. Holy smokes, the Tie Cats got their butts whooped on Canada Day. They lose to the BC Lions at home, 28-3. This may have been the worst game I have ever sat and watched live. Maybe one of the worst games I've ever seen, period. From the opening kickoff, this was just absolutely terrible. I don't even know where to start, so Mike, you want to cover the offense. What do you got to say?
Well, it looked okay the first drive. We started moving the ball pretty well. And then we missed that field goal. Brett Maher missed the field goal, which was like kind of a recurring theme on this night. Oh, yeah, they looked out of sorts. Mazzoli lost his confidence at some point, and he just never got it back. We looked good at some points in the game. I'm looking at Mazzoli's numbers right now. He was 26 for 39, 248 yards, and two interceptions, no touchdowns. So the 26 for 39, not that bad. 248 yards, can't complain. 66, percentage-wise on his passing, 66%. So those aren't terrible numbers, but the two interceptions hurt us, and he just wasn't the same Mazzoli that he was last week. I think last week he was 27 for 37, 300 and something yards, and two touchdowns, no interceptions. So I don't know what happened in that game. They just way too many penalties on offense and defense, and they just never got a rhythm going offensive wise. So it was just a terrible performance on the Tie Cats' part. One of the worst I've ever seen under Austin, at least. It's been way worse. We've seen way worse back in the early 2000s. But just a very disappointing performance. Gabe only got seven touches for 40. It seemed like they gave Gable the ball more, but I guess not. He only had seven touches for 48 yards. Pretty good average, 6.9 yard average. But not a good performance on offense. So hopefully next week they can pick it up and get back to what we're used to for Ticats offense.
Yeah, it was just so disappointing to see them come out. Like, they win the coin toss, and everyone's amped, and they had that really good first drive, I thought, and it ends with a missed field goal. And then they just went the entire rest of the first half, two and outs. I'm pretty sure it was five straight two and outs.
I think they ended up with eight or nine two and outs on the game.
Yeah, and then they get the really good drive at the end, but then there's a penalty that moves the ball back, and then a missed field goal. Like, they had two good drives and came away with 1 point. You don't have to be a veteran CFL fan to know that that's not good. The score at halftime was 7-2, so they were still very much in this, but it was legitimately tough to watch.
Yeah, it was an ugly game. You know, BC didn't perform that well either. So, you know, it wasn't one-sided as the score indicated. But, man, like you just said, it was tough to watch. Ugly, ugly game for the Ticats. Just terrible. I hope to never see that kind of performance again this season. You know, Ken Austin must have pooped a melon after that performance.
Yeah, it was just bad. And like, is there anything else you can really say about the offense in that game? Like, what you said, 9-2 and outs. Like, there's just trying to comment on these things, it's difficult because they almost literally did nothing in the game. Like, they scored 3 points. They all came on it was a punt single, and then there were two missed field goals. Like, maybe the most pathetic way that you can get to 3 points in professional football.
Yeah, and it was just, you know, the turnovers by the offense. Two interceptions by Mazzoli, a fumble by Fantus, a fumble by Underwood, four turnovers. That's way too much. So way too many penalties, way too many fumbles and interceptions. We just did not deserve to win that game. At some point, we were still in it, and I thought maybe they might come back, might turn it around, but it just never happened. They just could never get a pace going, never get a really good drive going, never put points up on the board. And to only have 3 points at the end of the game in a CFL game is pathetic, honestly. It was just a pathetic performance by the Ticats all around.
And the thing was, the game was there for the taking, especially early, and Hamilton had a few opportunities defensively. I'm going to move on to the defense now, because I think we've said about all we can say about an offense that didn't get into the end zone or even really put points on the board, period. There were opportunities there early on in the game. Two missed interceptions, one by Emmanuel Davis and one by Johnny Sears Jr. Both of those things could have flipped momentum. The Ticats would have picked those passes off. Maybe that gets the team sparked and they do something with them. It led to only four BC points. One drop, I think it was the Davis drop, led to a missed field goal by BC's kicker, Richie Leone. And then I think the Sears drop led to a successful field goal by Leone. So it didn't add up to much at the end of the game, but maybe momentum swings early if the Ticats are able to make those two plays. But then they also do get the two fumble recoveries. And one of the only players in this game that I was actually very excited about and thought played a good game was John Chick. He had two fumble recoveries, which is, guys sometimes don't get two fumble recoveries in a season. For him to pick up two in a game, he was just always around the ball. And I'm grasping at straws here to come up with positives in this game, because when you, again, lose 28-3 and you don't score points except by singles, there's not much that you can point to and say, well, this was good. Chick's performance is about the closest I can come to a positive out of this game. But just like opportunities to flip momentum in this game, and the Ticats just did not take those chances and run with them. And again, BC kind of pounded them in the second half, but in the first half, when things were still really tight, that could have been where the Ticats made their move, you know what I mean?
Yeah, if they would have got a couple of those picks, you know, we get some good field position. Like you said, it could have turned around the game, but it just wasn't to be in this one. And just in the second half, I think it was third quarter, there was three offsides in a row, and I think it was by the same person. I'm not positive. It might have been numerous people, but I think it was the same person. Might have been Adrian Tracy. I'm not sure. Do you remember?
Well, Tracy got called for one specifically, but then the others were called on the defensive line. So that could have been one guy offside, multiple guys offside. The man in the middle lining up offside, but Tracy was definitely one of those guys. In my piece for Three Down Nation after the game, I singled him out as someone who did not have a particularly good game. He wasn't alone, but him and Jeff Tisdale, who we'll talk about in a bit, those two guys to me really stood out as guys that had stinkers. Another thing that kind of surprised me in this is BC went with more of a max protect offense, and which allowed Jennings to make some reads, and the Ticats weren't able to get a ton of pressure. What it also allowed them to do was run the football. Jeremiah Johnson absolutely punished these guys in the first half of the game, just abused the Ticats on the ground. I remember last week a lot of people were making a lot of noise about how Hamilton had only allowed Toronto to rush for 1 yard. But I thought maybe too much was made of that because the Ticats were up quick and the Ticats were up big that it kind of forced the Argos out of running the football. So I didn't really look at that. I don't even think we talked about it last week, really, because I just didn't think much was, like, it was, we're making too much out of it. I think some commentators were making too much out of it. So to see them just get abused and abused and abused, and it was like 6, 7, 8, 9 yards every single time Johnson touched the ball. And then when Johnson came out of the game, I'm assuming due to injury, I'm not really sure. I just know at some point it was Shaq Murray-Lawrence who was back there and not Jeremiah Johnson. Lawrence was able to run the ball. And BC came in with this game plan of, we are not going to allow the Ticats to pressure Jennings and make him uncomfortable. We'll go max protect. We'll go 2 or 3 wide, and we will force the game into the hands of their secondary. And kudos to them. That was an excellent, excellent game plan, because what they did is they picked on the Ticats' weakest defensive link, which was their secondary, and they especially picked on Jeff Tisdale. Holy smokes, did he have a bad game. It would have been even worse. Like, he was beat deep on the Sean Gore pass, which we all saw. He was beat deep on a pass from Jennings to Brian Burnham, who dropped the ball, and if he would have held on to it, that would have been a touchdown. Like, this is one of the worst games I've ever seen from a defensive back in the CFL, maybe ever. Tisdale was just awful.
I'll comment on the Tisdale thing in a minute. I'm just looking at Jeremiah Johnson's numbers. He's got 12 attempts for 76 yards, a 6.3 yard average. So yeah, those are good numbers, and it's kind of discouraging to see such a strong run defense get run over like that. And you know, you mentioned the game plan by Wally Buono, and I was watching the post-game video on Three Down Nation with Drew Edwards and Steve Milton, and one thing Drew Edwards says was he thinks that they got out-coached this game as well. So I'd have to agree with that. They came in with a great game plan and really stifled the Ticats defense with their blitzes and all that stuff with their max protect, like you said. So yeah, it was a great coaching performance by the legend Wally Buono. And on Tisdale, yeah, it was just really, really bad. Beat deep a bunch of times, penalties galore. He would just did not have a good performance, and the Ticats thought so because they released him shortly after. So he's gone, and they have to get better at that position, as Austin said. So we're going to see a little shuffling in secondary as the weeks go on.
Yeah, for sure. We're going to talk about that in a bit. There's still some things from this game that I need to get off my chest, especially. You mentioned the penalties. Again, this was the second straight week where mental errors by this team, especially in the penalty department, hurt them. You mentioned earlier the 3 straight offsides when they had BC at, like, I think it was 2nd and 6 inside the 15-yard line. And after all those penalties were accounted for, they were 1st and goal from the 1.5, and they scored a touchdown. Like, this team needed all the breaks they could get to win this football game with how poorly they were playing, and they just kept shooting themselves in the foot and shooting themselves in the foot and shooting themselves in the foot. Tisdale took a ton of penalties. Like, Brett Maher took a bloody penalty on a punt. He took a chop block. Like, this was just, from every single angle, absolutely terrible. And I brought up Maher because I want to bring up the special teams. That, from the kicking game to the punting game to the coverage units, everything. Like, they were beaten in every phase of this game. Offense, defense, special teams, and you said coaching. Like, this was just an all-around terrible performance. But special teams, which has been one of the strong suits of this team, going on close to 4 years now, ever since Ken Austin took over. Man, were they just terrible. Like, the coverage units, which has always been one of Hamilton's strong suits. We talked about it last week, how great they were on punt coverage. This week, they give up 20 yards per punt return. They gave up 27.5 per kickoff return, and they allowed a missed field goal to be returned for 56 yards. Like, just all around, just a terrible, terrible night for the special teams unit.
Yeah, Maher was not what he was last week, that's for sure. 0 for 3 in the field goal department. You know, the punting was pretty good. He had a 57-yard average, a long of 89 yards, which obviously was assisted by the winds at Tim Hortons Field, which were blowing like crazy that game, especially early on in the game. But so you can take the punting yards with a grain of salt because all that wind. And you know, from going from the field goals for, I think it was 3 for 3 last week, made a 50-yarder, to 0 for 3 this week is kind of tough to swallow. You don't know what you're going to get from this guy, I guess, from week to week. Now that you can take in, like, with the punting, obviously with the field goals, you take into account the high winds. But, you know, you wanted to see what he'd be like in Tim Hortons Field with all those the weird wind that goes on there, and he didn't perform well. So that's a first test for him, and it didn't go very good.
No, he failed miserably, and it was very disheartening. He's going to be kicking eight more times now. He's already got one out of him, but he's going to be kicking nine more times here, more than anywhere else. It's great that he goes 3 for 3, 4 for 4, 5 for 5, or whatever on the road, but he needs to be going 3 for 3, 4 for 4, 5 for 5 at home. And yeah, he had that nice 89-yard punt, but even that, it sails into the end zone for a single point instead of bouncing out at the 5-yard line. Like, I would have preferred that be a much shorter punt that put BC deep instead of the Winds did take it. Don't get me wrong. I remember watching that going, holy smokes, that was a boomer, and it bounced and it rolled, and then the returner let it get in the end zone because that's what you do. But like, it was just everything. To sum this whole thing up, everything was just bad. That said, was there anything, any small little piece of this game that you can grasp onto as something you're like, well, at least this is good? I mentioned John Chick earlier. Do you have anything?
I don't think so. I mean, this is just terrible, terrible, terrible football. So no, nothing. I could jump on the back of your pick and say John Chick performed pretty well, but nothing new like that I can talk about that was really good. Banks had a poor performance in the return game, and everything was just, they were just out of sorts in this game, and they need to get it together for next week against Winnipeg, because if they lose that game, I mean, you lose against the Bombers, an 0-2 team that hasn't looked good. There's going to be consequences to that.
Yeah, the good thing about this is that it is a quick turnaround. We had the game Friday night. Winnipeg will be coming here Thursday. Chance to get that out of your system. Chance to get that ugly taste out of your mouth. Winnipeg's looked really bad. This is a chance, hopefully, for the Ticats to establish some sort of rhythm, some sort of dominance, get back to their winning ways, and get to 2-1 before they have to hit this 4-game road trip in 5 weeks. So I'm not too down. Like, this was a very, very, very bad game, and I understand why people are out there. And they're cursing up a storm and they're angry. But we do have to remember how well they played in Toronto. So we've seen them at their best, and now we've seen them at their worst. Hopefully we don't see performances like this one ever again, because if this continues to happen, then I think we have a lot to be worried about. That said,
yeah, you look at that game last week, and it might be a very important one in the standings, because Toronto's just going to get better. They were better against Saskatchewan this week, so that those 2 points against the Argos, East Division rival, could be huge in that 3-game series. So it's going to get tougher when we play the Argos 2 more times, so that could be a huge game.
Well, for sure, to steal one on the road. Now, there's 2 more games left in this 3-game series this year. One of them's going to be in Hamilton, where Toronto has had zero success since Tim Hortons Field opened. And when they get here, Zach Calero should be back, haven't had a couple weeks under his belt. Like, this, that could be when the Ticats get on a bit of an Edmonton-like roll. I think I've said this a few times over the offseason. Edmonton lost Mike Riley week 1. He was out for the first half of the season. He comes back. They go in that role that makes them Grey Cup champions. Maybe this, something similar could happen here. I'm still hoping that Mazzoli can keep this team afloat, just like Matt Nichols did with Edmonton last year. So maybe something comes here, and by the time they get to those 2 games against Toronto late in the year, they're clicking on all cylinders and getting ready to roll.
Yeah, we can only hope. With this game, you just gotta throw it in the garbage and move forward, and hopefully we can, you know, get it together in the upcoming weeks and have a good record before, like you mentioned, before Claros comes back, so we can just pick it up and, get this team turned around.
So, before we move on to some Ticats news, I've decided to add one little fun piece to the end of our game reviews every week, and I'm calling it the Chad Owens Jersey Watch. For anyone out there who doesn't know, I opened my big mouth to start the season and said if Chad Owens were to catch for 1,000 yards or 10 touchdowns and re-sign with the Ticats next year, that I would put my money where my mouth is and I would go out and I would buy a Chad Owens jersey. For anyone who knows me knows that that is not an easy thing for me to say. So going forward, I'm going to say what his totals are for the season, what his projected totals are, and where that makes us sit on the jersey watch, whether I will be wearing a number 2 Ticats jersey next year. So in 2 games so far this season, he has 12 catches for 136 yards and 1 touchdown. His projected totals off that are 108 catches for 1,224 yards and 9 TDs. So he is on pace to go well over 1,000 yards, but just miss out on 10 touchdowns. So, but the 108 catches to me, like, that would be a by far career high for him. He's posted some good numbers so far. He's been a real favorite of Jeremiah Mazzoli. He has 11 targets in each of the first 2 games. He's caught about 60 something yards in each game. So he's really popular with Mazzoli. So he could put up some big yardage before Caleros comes back. But as of right now, if things play out, continue to play out the way they are, I will be purchasing a Chad Owens jersey next year. So that is the first installment of the Chad Owens jersey watch. Let's come back next week and see where we sit against Winnipeg's defense. He could double his totals in one game. So I don't know. It's looking kind of likely that I'm going to be buying a Chad Owens jersey next year, Mike.
Well, if you do, you better hope that I think he just signed a 1-year contract. So hopefully you'll have, if you do get an Owens jersey, hopefully you'll be around for a bit so you can, you know, wear it at games. I know you don't wear jerseys of, you know, players that played on the team that aren't presently on the team. So hopefully he signs for another year or two so you can get some worth out of that jersey if you end up getting it.
Well, one of the caveat is he has to re-sign with the team. If he puts up these great numbers and then goes elsewhere,
yeah,
then now if he retires, I would still consider getting it. I think we should put in the addendum. A retirement means he's not playing, so his last playing season would have been with the Ticats. I would have no problems picking up an Owens jersey there. But if he goes and signs with Edmonton or especially Toronto, then it's not happening. He has to stay in Hamilton or at least end his career with the Ticats. Then it'll be purchased. But we'll have to wait and see. It's a lot closer than I thought it would be, to be honest with you. And I know this kind of sounds cruel, but I didn't really expect him to stay healthy all season, which is kind of part of the reason why I made such a grand proclamation, because, and this is no offense to him, but he's been hurt the last few years. He's looked remarkably healthy, and if you noticed in this game, every time he caught the ball, as soon as defenders were around him, he was pulling a Marvin Harrison, where he just did not want to get hit. That's going to keep him healthy all year, and he's still picking up yards. Like, good for him, but it's going to make my wallet a little bit lighter.
Yeah, it's, I hope he stays healthy. I hope he keeps playing the way he plays, and, you know, get those extra yards, but just be careful with his body. So I'm kind of rooting for Owens, and it'd be kind of funny to see an Owens jersey on your back.
I would have to take a picture and I would have to tweet it out, because it would be hell had frozen over. But yeah, hey, if he does it, he does it. And if he puts up those numbers, the Ticats probably win a lot of games, so I'm not going to be too upset. So the Ticats made a couple of roster moves. You already alluded to it. Jeff Tisdale was released. They also released a fellow DB, Ellis Langster, off the practice squad. And they brought back a couple of guys.
Boy.
What?
Ellis Langster, that's the guy that you projected to be
the starter last year, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I know.
Your boy.
Yeah, my boy. Just what a man. So he's been released from this team like three times now, and I don't think he's ever seen the field. So that was like of all time whiffs on predictions. That was a pretty big one.
Yeah, it's almost looking as bad as my Winnipeg in
second place. First place, second place, going to the Grey Cups type thing. Sure is. But they also brought back a couple of guys that were cut after training camp. Chris Davis, defensive back, and 2016 eighth round draft pick wide receiver Matt Urin. Any thoughts on these moves? We kind of already talked about Tisdale, but is anyone really surprised that he was released?
No, I'm not. I know that all the fan base isn't. Just a brutal performance, you know, beat deep several times, stupid penalties, face mask penalty. You know, there was two or three penalties against him, so he really dug his own grave, per se, and he's gone. And I don't know if he'll be able to find another job in the CFL after that weak performance. He's getting up there in age, and I don't know if he's going to get another chance. You know, I hope he does, because, you know, it always sucks to see a player, you know, lose his job and not get another opportunity. But yeah, just not a surprise at all. And we're going to bring in someone up. Well, maybe not bring in someone else, but, you know, shuffle around the roster and see if they can make some adjustments and get better at that position. So, you know, it's tough for him, but it had to be done.
Yeah, and Chris Davis, I don't know if you remember this, but back in the preseason, I was really high on him. I saw him play against the Argos, and I thought he played really well. And then he had a decent-ish game against Ottawa, but got hurt. And I'm wondering if the injury was part of the reason that he was cut when camp broke, and if now maybe he's healthy and he's ready to contribute. I think this is a guy that we could see, because he was with the team in camp, so he knows the system, he knows the schemes. Don't be surprised if you see this guy maybe even starting this week against Winnipeg. I liked what I saw from him in the preseason, and I think there's a really good chance that he could be seeing a starting role on this defense very, very soon.
If we do, we're gonna see what he's all about. So hopefully a good preseason can make its way into the regular season, and he can be a contributor on this team, and you know, be a better player than Tisdale was in one game.
So those weren't the only moves the Ticats made. They completed a trade with the Edmonton Eskimos, and they sent linebacker Alex Hoffman Ellis to Edmonton for a conditional 8th round pick in the 2018 draft. When Alex Hoffman Ellis was signed back in February, I gushed over it. I thought this was going to be one of those signings where you don't talk too much about it in February, but you really, really go, wow, what a great move by them come July and August. He never saw the field. He was beaten out in camp by Larry Dean, who has maintained the starting middle linebacking job with this team through the first two games, and has looked really good. Like, really, really good. I've been really impressed by him as a CFL rookie. So it kind of made Hoffman Ellis expendable. He was on the one-game injured list against Toronto. He was one of the two healthy scratches against BC. So he's off to Edmonton, and I do think Edmonton's getting a good player there. So that will work out for them. And the Ticats get some salary cap relief because Hoffman Ellis was a free agent signing, so he was making decent amount of money. And they get a conditional draft pick in return. So, look, I guess we were too high on Hoffman Ellis when he signed. But, hey, he was just simply put beat out for a job by someone else who has performed better. That's just the way it goes.
Yeah, I was also really high on the signing in the offseason. You know, I thought that Hoffman Ellis would be a starter on this team for sure. And like you said, he just got beat out by Dean. And Dean's been great. He led the team in tackles last week with 8. So I guess we have our middle linebacker. And Hoffman Ellis just wasn't in the cards to be a starter for the Ticats. And, you know, we get a 8th round pick, which is, I don't know, maybe you might get a player out of that. But 8th round in the CFL draft is pretty, you know, it's stretching a bit. But I guess that's the way it goes. They couldn't get anything better for him. So we'll see how that turns out. And, but yeah, I still think Hoffman Ellis is a good player like you do. And, he should be able to contribute to the Eskimos and help them out at the linebacker position, but kind of disappointing. Thought he would have been a good player for the Ticats, but it just didn't turn out that way.
It makes me wonder with the cap savings the team will get by trading Hoffman Ellis, if maybe there could be there's some really, really good players that are still free agents. Enoch Mwamba is one of them. I'm not saying they're going to go out and sign Enoch Mwamba because we're talking about middle linebackers. They already have one where they're not paying a lot of money to. But what about Mitchell White? Do you think there's any sort of possibility that this could lead to Mitchell White coming to Hamilton? Because he was a late cut by the Alouettes in camp, a very shocking cut. He's still sitting out there, and we know Hamilton needs help at defensive back. I don't know. I'm not saying this is going to happen. I'm saying maybe there's a move here to be made that we're not seeing right now, and that's part of why Ellis was moved for something for so little, like a conditional 8th round pick. Like, that's nothing, essentially. So maybe this is like part one of a multi-part move where we could see someone like Mitchell White headed to Hamilton, which would really help bolster that secondary.
Yeah, that would be interesting. I mean, the Alouettes have released some players with a lot of talent this season. So bring him in. You know, the DBs are not as strong as they have been in the past in Hamilton. So to bring in a talented guy like Mitchell White would be a good thing. I mean, more depth, more talent on that in that secondary would be awesome. So it's a definite possibility. Like you said, I don't know if it's going to happen or not, but this could be the start of some real roster moves by the Ticats, you know, getting rid of some of that salary cap and bringing in some new guys to really improve this defense.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see if this is the first of many moves or if this is all there is to it. We won't know. But this was not the only trade that was consummated in the last couple of days. Last Wednesday, if you recall, Three Down Nation's Justin Dunk, friend of the show, been on here before, great guy, love him. He reported that there was some animosity brewing between Sean Lemon and the Saskatchewan Rough Riders, and that their relationship had soured considerably since he signed there in January. I don't know if you saw the reaction to this. Even Lemon himself tweeted out that Dunk was full of crap and Rider fans just piled on him, talking about how he lacked integrity, talking about, like, just they just hammered this guy. And then what happens over the weekend? Sean Lemon got traded from the Saskatchewan Rough Riders to the Toronto Argonauts. So maybe all those people who questioned Dunk's integrity online, and Lemon himself, maybe should come out and issue an apology. But he was dealt to Toronto along with a conditional 2018 draft pick for offensive lineman Matt Sewell and quarterback Mitchell Gale. What are your thoughts on this deal?
Well, I think it's a win-win for both teams. The Saskatchewan Rough Riders need help on the offensive line. D'Argos get Sean Lemon. You know, he's a bit of a, you know, he's played for a lot of teams in the CFL. He's a good player, but he seems to be, teams seem to give up on him quickly. So I don't know what's up with that, if it's an attitude thing or whatnot. But, you know, the Argos bring in another new defensive lineman, the newly revamped D-line in Toronto. You know, we all know about Hickman and Balky and all those guys that they got from Hamilton. But now they bring in a new guy. You got to ask yourself, where is he going to fit in? Is he going to take Foley's position? I'm not sure. I mean, that would take away a Canadian from the starting lineup. So I'm sure they'll find a way to pencil him in. But yeah, it should be interesting to see how this all turns out for the Argos. And if Matt Sewell is still, you know, he had a lot of high expectations when he was drafted a couple years ago, and he just hasn't really lived up to it. So we're going to see if he can help out the Riders on the offensive line, and if Lemon can really bring the Argonauts defensive line to a new level on the outside there.
So the Riders needed offensive line depth. I don't know if you noticed in the last game, but they suffered a couple of injuries, and they put Hassan Hasime, former Hamilton Tiger Cat defensive lineman, on the offensive line, and they had converted him from defense to offense during camp, and he had never played offensive line before. So they desperately needed offensive line help. So getting Sewell, I think, is a great job. And they clearly needed quarterback help, because they had BJ Coleman, I think, as their backup quarterback, who has never taken a snap in a regular season game. And they brought in former Calgary third stringer, I think it's Brian Moniz, I think is his name. And he came in for a third and short and fumbled the snap. Toronto returned it for a touchdown. So they desperately needed quarterbacking depth. Mitchell Gale, he was with Hamilton for a cup of tea last year. He'd been with the Argos a few times before. He'd never really done much, but he's a veteran of this league, so I think that's a good get. And with Lemon, he wanted to leave Saskatchewan because he wanted to be a starter. You're right. It's not Ricky Foley they're going to be replacing. It's Justin Hickman, and I could see Justin Hickman not being with this team much longer.
Yeah, I could see that too. He hasn't made much noise in the first two games for the Argonauts, so maybe he gets released and someone else picks him up. But he's, you know, his stock has really dropped over the last couple of years since he came back from the NFL. And you look at all the quarterbacks that the Argonauts have given up over the last couple of years. You know, they got rid of Harris. They got rid of Caleros. Now they get rid of Gale. And, you know, I look at some of the Argonaut fans, and they're pretty high on Gale. Even though he hasn't done much, I think he was 8-for-8 in the preseason game. And yes, preseason game, you can't really judge a player on preseason. But you got to wonder about the Argonauts' future at quarterback when they keep giving up their backup prospects, you know?
Yeah, it's strange. I know that Milanovic has developed, like you talked about Harris and Caleros, those guys have become starters. Harris looks like the best quarterback in the CFL right now, and we saw that Caleros was the best quarterback in the CFL last year. So clearly, he knows how to develop quarterbacks, but at some point, that luck is going to run out. And relying on Ray going forward, I still think Ricky Ray has a lot left in the tank. I thought he looked pretty good against Saskatchewan this week. But at some point, you got to keep one of these young guys and groom them. Maybe they think Logan Kilgore is the guy. I guess we're going to find out.
Yeah, for sure. It's going to be very interesting to see how these backup quarterbacks, like the new guys coming in, or the new guys behind Ray, if they can develop them to be the players that Harris and Caleros turned out to be. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting in the future to see.
So it's time for some injury roundup news, and this one sucks. SJ Green is out for the year with a torn ACL, MCL, and PCL. He has torched the Ticats numerous times over his career, and you'd think that would mean I would hate this guy. But he is so much fun to watch. The league is worse off when its stars are injured. And given that Green's 31 and this is three major ligaments in his knee, this could be one of those things that sadly is a career-ending injury. I hope it's not. We see guys come back from knee injuries all the time now. It's not like it was 20, 30 years ago. But man, this really blows, because him and Daron Carter, I think we're going to form a pretty fun wide receiving duo to watch, as we'd seen when Carter was here previously. But yeah, this one's tough. This one is really tough. One of the stars of this league is gone for the season, and the league is worse for it.
Yeah, for sure. You never want to see a top player like that go down. And maybe if he was, you know, 25, 26, you'd expect him to come back. But at 31, you know, that's not old by any means. But in football, it's getting up there a bit. So for a serious injury like that, I hope it's not the end of his career. But you never know. It's going to be tough for him to come back. And even if he does, he probably won't be the same player that he was before the injury. So yeah, it just sucks to see him go down, such a great player like that. So I hope he comes back, but we shall see if he can really, you know, recover from this terrible injury.
Yeah, that wasn't the only blow to the Alouettes this week. Tyrell Sutton, last year's top rusher, added to the six-game injured list, suffered an injury. But he wasn't also the only one added to the six-game injured list. Henry Burris, who was on the one-game injured list heading into the game this week, has been six games as well. Sutton's loss is pretty big for the Owls. He, like I said, last year's top rusher. But they do have Brandon Rutley. They do have Stephon Logan. Like, they do have some guys that can run the ball. So I think they'll be okay. Just, again, it sucks to see a guy like Tyrell Sutton, who's fun to watch, miss games. The Henry Burris one to me is the most interesting because now that he's been six games, and of course he can be pulled off at any time, and with the way Trevor Harris has been playing, I don't know if Henry Burris is ever going to get back on the field.
Yeah, you know, Harris has just basically been perfect over the last two games, or a game and a half. This guy looks like MLP candidate, like he did last year at the start of the season when Ray went down. So it's going to be tough. It's going to be a very tough decision for Rick Campbell and company to pull him out and put Burris back in when he's playing lights out. I mean, this guy, it looks like the real deal going forward. So, you know, you got your future quarterback that's playing awesome. Maybe he's even the present quarterback. So, yeah, it's going to be really tough to take him out and put Burris in.
I don't think it'll be tough at all. I think you don't put Burris back in unless Harris starts crapping the bed. Why do you make this change? You brought in Trevor Harris because of what he did last year, and you're grooming him as your QB for next year. If you can accelerate that plan and Harris can play as well as he is, there's no reason to bring Burris back in. If Burris was, as all Ottawa fans were telling us, oh, Burris took less money next year, so he's going to be the mentor. Well, he's got hurt. Now he's not playing. Might as well move him into that mentor role now. But I've seen Henry Burris try to play the mentor, and he does not do it well. No. And I know people in Ottawa are saying, there's no QB controversy. And I agree, there isn't. Trevor Harris is the man right now, and I don't think you see Henry Burris back on that field unless Trevor Harris absolutely just tanks it.
Yeah, Burris is going to be a grumpy Gus if he loses his starter's job, and he's not a mentor. He's not going to mentor anyone behind him. He wants to be the guy, and he's not going to help anyone take his job. So, yeah, it's Harris is the guy right now. If I were the coach, I'd stick with him just because, I mean, like, Burris had a good first half. You know, he played for the first half of the first game and he looked good, but Harris looks better. So, you know, I know you, like, if it was your decision, it would be easy and Trevor Harris would be the guy, but I don't know if they made a commitment to Burris telling him he was the starter. And you don't, quote unquote, you don't lose your job to injury, but that's not really true. It's, we hear people say that, but it's not true.
Yeah, tell that to Drew Bledsoe.
Exactly. So if there's a guy behind him comes in and he performs better than the starter, then there's a good chance that he's going to be the starter, even when the incumbent starter is healthy. So, you know, it's gonna be a tough decision to tell Burris that he's not the guy anymore if Harris keeps performing like he does. So and if they do put Burris back in and he doesn't perform well, he's gonna get yanked pretty quick. So I think they have a good situation there with the two quarterbacks, but it's gonna be tough.
You remember Damon Allen, right?
No,
yeah. never heard of him?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, 2004, Damon Allen's the starting quarterback for the Toronto Argonauts. They win the Grey Cup. 2005, at like 41 or 42, he wins the MOP for the first time in his career. 2006, he's in a training camp battle for his job, and he wins out. He won the job. He beat out Michael Bishop, but he gets hurt, and Bishop plays. And Bishop, I think the Argos went like 10-1 or something with him as a starter. So then the following year, there's a legit quarterback battle that Allen barely wins. He gets hurt in the first game of the year. Michael Bishop comes in. Michael Bishop plays all right. I think the Argos ended up finishing first in 2007 as well. But then he gets hurt, and then I think they had Mike McMahon, and Mike McMahon sucked in the NFL as well as the CFL. So then Damon Allen got back in, even though he was a third stringer at one point. He gets back in, and he plays all right. But by the end of the season, he's retired. So, like, there's a precedent here. Like, Ottawa fans want to say, well, Burris gets him to the Grey Cup, and Burris won MOP. Look at Damon Allen. Damon Allen was an older player, clearly at the end of his career, who had won a Grey Cup and had been MOP, but was still fighting for his job with a younger guy because there's always going to be a younger guy that comes and tries to take your job. Trevor Harris is like 11 years younger than Henry Burris. If they want to keep Trevor Harris happy and keep him there, he's going to have to start sooner or later. He's proving now that he deserves to start. So when Burris is healthy, he might just have to accept the fact that he's no longer the starter there, whether he won the MOP last year or not. And the thing is, if Damon Allen can cede the starting job to Michael Bishop, who was never as good as Trevor Harris has looked so far, then Henry Burris can cede the starting job to Trevor Harris, period. He might not like it, but he's probably going to have to accept it.
Yeah, it's just the way it is in football. I mean, if there's a better player, then they're going to go with that player. So Burris is going to have to swallow his pride and be a backup to Trevor Harris eventually. So sooner or later, it's going to happen.
All right, Mike, it's time for everyone's new favorite segment of the week. It is Mike's Bozo of the Week. Who you got for week two, Mike?
Well, it's a double bozo this week. Everyone could probably see this coming, but, you know, the Jerron Carter incident, I'm going to have to go with bozo number one, Jerron Carter, bozo number two, Rick Campbell, because, yes, Carter made a bad decision. You know, he got the touchdown, he got nailed. I don't know how he got up and got hit. He got hit really hard, right in the head, it looked like. Got up, walked right towards the Ottawa bench, and bumped Rick Campbell, which was stupid, but I think Rick Campbell had a part in it too. He wasn't on the sideline. He was on the field and kind of flopped. You know, he looked like a soccer player out there flopping. And, you know, I think both these guys have parts in this incident, and they both get the bozo of the week for their parts in it. So double bozo this week, Jerron Carter for, you know, walking towards the Ottawa bench in a aggressive manner, and Rick Campbell for being on the field and then flopping after that, you know, gentle touch, basically.
I 100% agree with your bozos this week once again. When I thought of who could Mike pick, these were the two guys. And I could have even thrown in Jermaine Robinson, who was the one who took the shot. The headshot on Jerron Carter, and it was absolutely headshot, and it was absolutely disgusting that this happened. He's in the end zone. He caught the pass. Like, the play is over. Don't be taking headshots. Like, that's despicable. And then you have Jarrell Gavins, I believe, for Ottawa, who's throwing punches at Jerron Carter. You're a pretty big idiot if you want to punch a guy with your bare hand while he's wearing a helmet. Like, you look like a moron.
But, yeah, I never understood that. Like, you see it quite often where players punch players with their helmets on. I mean, you're just going to hurt your hand. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, there were a lot of bozos this one, but I can absolutely go with Rick Campbell and Jerron Carter. Not that it matters, but I definitely support these two as bozos of the week.
Break out the bozo crowns.
Yeah, what would they look like? Dunce caps, kind of, I guess?
Yeah, something like that. Maybe like a Burger King crown or something. I don't know.
We'll have to think of something. We got to crown our bozo of the year at the end of the year, so yeah. we'll have to think of some sort of prize.
Exactly. Defensive bozo of the year, offensive bozo of the year, media member bozo of the year, you know, for the bozies.
For the bozies. The bozies are coming, folks. The bozies are coming. Okay, we've talked about how terrible the Ticats look against the BC Lions. Let's get into a little game preview action here. The Ticats on Thursday night at Tim Hortons Field will get the chance to wash that taste out of their mouth as they take on the 0-2 Winnipeg Blue Bombers. So, offensively, I think this team needs to do some things better, obviously, in this game than they did against the BC Lions. I think first and foremost, they got to keep Jeremiah Mazzoli upright. They allowed 4 sacks against BC, and Mazzoli did not look comfortable in the pocket. You could see him looking at his feet. He was constantly shuffling. He did not get the time that he got the week before in Toronto, whether that's BC's defense being better, whether that's Hamilton's offensive line just not preparing properly. I don't know what it is, but we need to see week one offensive line, not the week two offensive line, because Winnipeg comes in with a pretty decent defensive line. Jamal Westerman, Euclid Cummings, Keith Scholigan, Trent Corney, rookie from Virginia, had his first sack of a CFL career. This is a pretty good defensive line that we're going to see out of Winnipeg, so they need to keep Mazzoli upright. We need to see CJ Gable get involved more. He had 9 total touches, 7 rushes against the BC Lions. He had 11 touches against Toronto the week before that, but 7 of those came basically when the game was already decided. I'm not going to say he needs to, you know, 15, 20 carries a game, but he should be getting double-digit touches every single game. I would like to see between 12 and 15 total touches in the run game and pass game for CJ Gable. This guy's a playmaker. He needs the ball in his hands to make plays. We saw him do some good stuff against BC early on. We saw him do some good stuff against Toronto. Get him more involved, and I think this team can get the W. And finally, the last thing I think offensively they need to do is they got to lean on that three-headed monster that they have at receiver. Andy Fantuz, Luke Tasker, and Chad Owens have been phenomenal so far this season for Jeremiah Mazzoli. Last week, they combined for 20 of Mazzoli's 26 completions. And for the year, this to me was incredible when I looked this up. They have caught 41 of the 53 completions that Jeremiah Mazzoli has thrown this year. That's 77% of the completions Mazzoli has gone to Fantuz, Tasker, and Owens. I expect to see a heavy dose of those three in this game. And I think, protecting Mazzoli, getting Gable involved, and leaning on those three veteran receivers, I think that's how the Ticats offensively can win this football game.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with all that. And defensive-wise, I'm looking at how they improve in the secondary with like who they put in there for Jeff Tisdale. If they get a guy that's going to be a big improvement over Tisdale's performance last week. So I'm looking at the secondary. I'm looking at if the defensive line, how they perform, if they can get a lot of pressure on Willie, because the first two games Willie hasn't had a lot of time. It's been their Achilles heel over the last couple of years for the Bombers. The offensive line hasn't performed well, so John Chick, get in there, do your thing. Get Laurent going up the middle. So I'm looking at those two things for on the defensive side of the ball, and the penalties. Got to cut down on those penalties. It's killing us. We need to cut down on the penalties. So those are the three things I'm looking for: penalties, the replacement for Tisdale, and the defensive line. See if they can get pressure and stop the run, because they were beaten pretty bad in the run game last week. So they gotta, we've always been talking about how the Ticats have great run defense, so they gotta show it this week.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious to see all those things that you mentioned as well. And of course, I think we're both wanting to see Brett Maher make a bounce back performance in this one. I'm hoping he's not needed as much. I'm hoping the team is able to score touchdowns and not settle for field goals. But if he gets a couple chances at field goals and a couple punting opportunities, we need to see that improve from last week. And the coverage units, again, the same. Pretty much whatever they didn't do against BC, which was everything, I want to see in this game. So I don't think we're asking for too much.
No, and we're gonna see, hope we're gonna see again if he can kick at Tim Hortons Field. I don't think there's gonna be that high winds this time around, but I'm sure there'll be a little bit, so they'll be swirling in there, and we're gonna see if he can redeem himself from a poor performance, first performance in Tim Hortons Field.
How worried will you be if they lose this game?
I'll be pretty worried. I'm not worried right now. I think that they're still a really good team, and I think they'll bounce back. But if they lose to the Bombers get the first win of the season, then I'll be a bit concerned, because especially if they lose the way they did against BC, especially if they're not disciplined, especially if they don't move the ball and score touchdowns, I'll be really, really concerned if they don't. Like, if they lose to a close one, I'll be concerned. If they play like they did last week again, I might be hitting the panic button.
Yeah, I think I'm with you there. I don't, and I think we probably said this going into the BC game. I don't see a way that they can lose this one simply because Winnipeg has not looked good at all. The scores have been close, but that's more been a case of Winnipeg's had a lot of big fourth quarters when the games were pretty much out of reach. Like, if you look at Drew Willey's passing numbers, it's like under 100 yards through the first 45 minutes of both games. And then he ends each game with like 300 yards passing. Like, it's kind of incredible how he's turned it on at the end there. But it's not something that, if you're a Bombers fan, you should really be happy about. Like, he's not been good. The team itself has not been good. So if the Ticats were to drop this one, and I don't know if you know this, but after that wicked 10-0 start they had at Tim Hortons Field, they're now like 3-6 at home since then. The mystique of Tim Hortons Field being a place where teams come to die has kind of gone away. The one team that has not performed well here is Winnipeg. They came in here last year and got absolutely smoked, but so did BC, and we saw the difference just last Friday. So I don't know. This has got to be, I'm not saying they have to blow them out, but this has got to be a pretty emphatic victory for the Ticats for me to not still keep questioning some of the things that are that sprouted up against the Lions. So I hope they win. I think they will win. I even think a lot of Bombers fans would probably say that the Ticats will win this one. But I said the same thing going against BC. So I'm a little concerned. If they lose this game, I think I will be very concerned.
Yeah, you got, a Winnipeg team that's desperate. There's a lot of pressure on O'Shea. There's a lot of pressure on Drew Willie. There's a lot of pressure on that team to perform. They signed all those guys in the offseason. So they're going to have to start winning some games here, or something's going to happen. Whether that's O'Shea getting released or cut or fired, and LaPolice taking over or whatever. But there's a lot of pressure on this Winnipeg team to win right now. So Hamilton's going to want to bounce back. They're after a very poor performance last week. They're going to be desperate for a big win, and so are the Bombers. So that could make out for a pretty intense game.
Yeah, so CFL Pick'em time, Michael. And again, we are involved with the Oski Wee Wees Pick'em group on CFL Pick'em. If you go to 3Down Nation when the show is posted, there will be a link to the invite to join the group. Please join the group. If you finish first in this group, you're going to win a pretty cool Ticats prize pack. Well, I'll keep saying it every week. It's a large black Ticats t-shirt and a Ticats toque. So before we get to our picks, let's go through the top three. After 2 weeks of play, in first place is Mike, is in first place with 707 points. In second place is a friend of mine, actually. Hirsch R. It's my buddy Richard. Been friends with him for a long time. He is in second place. Joined the Pick'em group last week. He's got 635 points. And in third place is Tiger's Coach with 556 points. I myself am sitting just out of the top three. I'm in fourth place with 536 points. Mike, I'm gunning for that number one spot. And this week, I'm taking it from you. So let's get to the picks. Game one, Thursday night, Tim Hortons Field, Hamilton, Ontario. The Winnipeg Blue Bombers take on the Hamilton Tiger Cats. Mike, who you got?
I got the Bombers. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, my God. I was like, are you kidding me?
No, I got the Tiger Cats. I think they'll bounce back. They played terrible last week. I think they'll play good this week. So I got the Tiger Cats in a win.
Yeah, I'm taking the Tiger Cats, too. I think that's obvious. Winnipeg, to me, is a team in this that I don't think I'm going to pick until I actually see them win a game, or maybe they get Saskatchewan at home. Or it's like, they look like the worst team in the CFL so far this season, and I can't see myself picking them until I see something out of them that resembles them being an actual good team. Second game of the week. The Toronto Argonauts, after a big win in Saskatchewan, head to BC to take on the 2-0 BC Lions. This game, to me, I think this could be a really close one. Who you got in this one, Mike?
Well, it's tough for teams to go into BC, especially East Division teams, and win. But, I think BC, they're 2-0, but they haven't looked spectacular. You know, they've done enough to win those games, and I give them credit for it. They look like a pretty good team, but not a great team. So I think Toronto looked pretty good last week. I'm going to take the Argonauts over BC at BC Place. So it might be, a bit of a underdog pick on my part, but I'm going with the Argonauts.
So I'm going to take the Lions. Now, the Argos are staying out west. They played in Saskatchewan in week two. They're staying in Saskatchewan to practice this week. It's actually funny because there was a picture. Sean Lemon played for the Riders, got traded to the Argos. He was practicing in Argos colors at Mosaic Stadium. So it was kind of weird to see that. Everyone was kind of cracking jokes about it. But given that, I'm still going to take the Lions. I saw them firsthand against Hamilton. They look good. They look like they can game plan. Wally Buono looks like he hasn't lost a step. They're at home. If this was in Toronto, I would probably pick the Argos, but I'm going to give the slightest of edges to the BC Lions in this one. Next up, we have the Calgary Stampeders, fresh off their first win of the season over the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, going to Ottawa for the Red Blacks home opener, the 2-0 Red Blacks. Still weird to say. Who you got in this one, Calgary or Ottawa?
Now, this is might be the toughest one of the week. I'm going to go with the Red Blacks in their home opener. I just think that if Trevor Harris can keep playing the way he's playing, I think he's playing better than Bo Levi Mitchell. So if he can keep playing the way he's playing and put up those big numbers, put up those touchdowns, I think they'll get the win. So I got the Red Blacks in their home opener.
I'm going to take Calgary. I just gut feeling. Really no reason. All signs are pointing to Ottawa winning this one, but I just have faith in Calgary. Until they look terrible, and they didn't look great against BC in week one, but they looked a little bit better against Winnipeg. But again, they were at home, and that's Winnipeg, so who the heck knows? But as much as it makes sense to take Ottawa, I'm going to go with the road. I've taken two home teams so far. The road teams this year are 6-2. So I'm gonna say that Calgary goes into Ottawa and spoils their home opener. Give me the Stampeders. Finally, to end the week, this might be the main event of the weekend because of everything that went on in the offseason. We have the Saskatchewan Roughriders, 0-1, heading to Edmonton to play the Eskimos, coming off a bye, but also 0-1 after that crushing week one loss to the Ottawa Red Blacks. Chris Jones coming back to Edmonton. All those players coming back to Edmonton. The Esks coming off a bye. This has the makings of a grudge match, and I love it. Mike, who are you taking in this one?
We got to go with the Eskimos. They're just a better team than the Riders. The Riders look not so good against the Argonauts in their first game. They got some work to do there. You know, Chris Jones has to do his thing, has to figure this thing out before they're going to get some wins. So in a grudge matchup, like you said, I got to take the Eskimos at home. I think I'm going to be at this game, so I'm pretty pumped for it. I got the day off work, so it's going to be a fun game. I think there'll be a big crowd. And it's just going to be a great game to be at. So, but I got the Eskimos taking this from the Riders.
So I think the Riders looked a lot better against Toronto than they did pretty much at any time last season. I thought the defense was better. I thought with Durant in there, the offense looked good. All that said, I'm not taking them. I'm taking the Eskimos. I think Edmonton's just a better team. They're coming off a bye, longer time to prep. Bodies are a little bit more rested. They're going to want to stick it to Chris Jones, whether those players and that coaching staff says it or not. Give me the Eskimos. So, to round up the picks, Mike, you're taking the Ticats, the Argos, the Red Blacks, and the Eskimos. And I am taking the Ticats, Lions, Stampeders, and Eskimos. So, two picks different this week. That's my chance. Go 4-0. Climb up. Take that first place spot from you.
Yeah, it was wasn't as good as my first week. I went 2-2 this week compared to 3-1 last week. So hopefully I can get back on the winning side of things and hold off you and the other contestants in the Nahoski Wee Wee's group and be still sitting number one after this week.
Well, we'll have to wait and see. All right, Mike, it is question time. We only have two this week, but they're two good ones, I think. One fun one, especially. So the first one comes in via Twitter from our good buddy Major League CFL. He asks, Brandon Banks is fast, real fast. Why don't the Cats use him like Ottawa uses Chris Williams?
That's a good question. I think that we might see that going forward a little bit more. I'm not sure about that. We saw it a lot in the first game, but that's because Tolliver went down, I think. But that's a good question. We talked about it last week about maybe they're looking long term and they know that this guy can't return kicks and punts forever and try to make him a good receiver. So I like to see him in the offensive playbook more and more. I said that last year. I'm going to say it again this year. Maybe it's just a numbers game. Maybe they think that there's better receivers in front of him and he just can't get on the field because of that. But I'd like to see him in the offense more, maybe some go routes, you know, send him deep, use that speed, get behind players. He can catch the ball pretty well. So I just think that maybe Chris Williams is a little bit better receiver than Brandon Banks at this point, and that's why they've been using him as a receiver so much. You know, you see the numbers through the first game. Last week he had 187 yards and touchdown is just phenomenal numbers for Williams. So, yeah, I'd like to see him in the offense more, but that's not my decision. So, yeah, that's pretty much it.
I think Williams has always been the better receiver. I think even when he came into the league, despite all the great things he did on special teams, he had two back-to-back 1,000-yard receiving seasons with the Ticats, and people tend to forget that because of how great he was in the return game. And I don't think Brandon Banks is as good a receiver, but if you look at Ottawa, Chris Williams is their best receiver. Ernest Jackson's good, Brad Sinopoli's good, Greg Ellingson is good, I can't even remember who else they had. They're good receivers, but Chris Williams is one of the top five receivers in this league, and has been since pretty much his second season with the Ticats. Brandon Banks, I think, could be a good receiver, but I think this is more just them finding ways to utilize him in the offense that will maximize his abilities there while still keeping him fresh for special teams. Chris Williams rarely does special teams anymore. He's not the punt returner, kick returner that he was when he was with the Ticats. He hasn't had a return touchdown since he was with the Ticats. He's been with Ottawa for a year and a bit now. And he just doesn't really get back to they use other guys in the kick return game. Brandon Banks is primarily a kick and punt returner, but I would like to see him phased more into the offense like you. I think he could contribute there. I wish they would use him more, but I think if you use him more on offense, he won't be as used as much on special teams. And I think on special teams is where he can really, really be a game breaker.
Yeah, and he can bring back touchdowns, and the really big thing is the field position. You know, he can flip a field real quick, so he's a big part of the team on special teams, and that's how they're using him right now. So he will be in the offense occasionally, and we'll see him out there, but he won't be a starter, I don't think, anytime soon.
So the last question comes from Twitter as well. This is from Double Blue Blog, which is an Argos fan blog, which, holy smokes, we have Argos fans who listen to the show. I think that's great. Maybe it's because of all the talk we did during the preseason and the offseason about how great we thought the Argos would be that they thought maybe this was an Argos show. Who knows? But he had a great question that caught my eye and made me chuckle. And it's pretty much directed at you, buddy. Mike's tweets are not as good as before the podcast. Now that he's famous, has he packed it in? So yeah, Mike, why do your tweets suck now?
Well, I guess I just work a lot during games. I work a lot at night, and I'm not tweeting live like I used to when I lived out east. So maybe that's part of the problem. I'm not sure. But I'm just such a big shot now. I'm famous, and I have a podcast and all that. But no, I'm just kidding. But that's maybe part of the problem, that I'm just working during games a lot, and I don't do the live tweets.
All right. I think this was a call, much like you called out Oss and Joe for on Rouge, White, and Blue for not having you on. Sounds to me like you're being called out to up your tweet game, Mike. So yeah. Maybe those live games that you do get to watch, you should really be A little more interactive.
Yeah, I mean, we'll step it up a bit.
Well, that's all for this week. So don't forget that you can subscribe to the show on iTunes or listen to it or download it at 3downnation.com. If you want a question answered, good, fun, or silly, doesn't matter. We're up for any type of question you have. You can hit us both up on Twitter. Mike, your Twitter handle?
Mike_Ticats.
I am Josh_82. And post those questions and comments in the 3downnation comments section. We'll get to those as well. So for Podski Wee Wee this week, I'm Josh Smith.
I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.